464 lectures on ancient philosophy. Activities. Never will peace reign upon the earth until we are ruled by the fit, until he who possesses vision is permitted to see for the blind, until he who senses greatness is permitted to interpret its issues for those who are unresponsive to magnitudes. Men are truly free only when, governed by the wise, they are inclined gently toward the perfection of their own natures. Men are truly great only when, admitting the supremacy of the wise, they offer both life and chattel to the service of integrity. Plato dreamed of that glorious day when the wranglings and contentions of mankind would cease, when people would turn from their petty tyranny to unite in a common destiny. When the needs of the many would be removed from exploitation by the few. He dreams in vain, however, who envisions a government of the people or by the people, but he is a seer. Indeed, who can formulate the concept of a rational government for the people? That man is happy who can trust his Lord, that state is fortunate whose prince is a philosopher. Humanity turns toward wisdom when the fruits of wisdom are apparent to it. Having once beheld the rewards of integrity, all men will move joyously toward that state of concord where indwell the wise, conserving their resources and fulfilling the destiny of rational souls. We must learn that wisdom is neither book learning nor empty pedantry. The sham studiousness of the sophists was facetiously termed eyeglass believing by the medieval mystics. Our present educational system would be fundamentally opposed to this philosophic program, because the school is the servant of utility and our standards of utility are lamentably insufficient. We teach men to bargain, barter, and connive. We are unsparing of both time and money in our effort to fit them into a system obviously impractical. Centuries must pass before the body of society will be sufficiently sickened of the vanities it supports to be inclined toward integrity. Even truly the day of awakening must come, for man cannot suffer indefinitely, and the saturation point of human endurance must sometime reach its limit. The unnecessary burden. The goal of philosophy 465, which we carry and have borne through uncounted ages, will then be cast aside, and turning to truth we shall find liberation. Polemics is not necessarily the abode of the wise, nor is much hair-splitting to be confused with erudition. The elevation of a man to high position does not ipso facto improve the quality of his nature or increase his capacity to receive. True. Elevation is opportunity, but the innate characteristics of the one promoted must determine the use to be made of that up. Port unity. To remove politicians from power and replace them with scientists or philosophers trained according to our present concepts would not necessarily solve our problem. The sages of Plato's vision are the truly wise men initiated into the disciplines of the soul and deeply versed in the mysteries of life. In the senates of the philosophic elect, blocks of biologists would not combine to frustrate the legislation of the physicists, nor would astronomers hold out on technicalities against the geometry attritions. Savants would neither give a little of this for a little of that, nor arbitrate away the rights of men to prolong an ephemeral political prestige. Where the learned differ, it is evident there is no learning. In that city of the wise, all the arts and sciences will complement each other, and the disciples of every branch of learning will mutually venerate each other's knowledge. Competition will cease, and cooperation will be reinstated as the true life of trade. The bartering of interests, the misappropriation of power, the malfeasance of office, all these are crimes possible only in a non-philosophic age where the blind who follow are unable to discern the fallacies of the blind who lead. For thousands of years, a devotee to the fetish of competition, man has devastated that Edenic garden over which the Lord designed him to be the keeper. A poor gardener he has made. He has torn up all the flowering plants which lend beauty to the spot, that in their place he might grow weeds for a little profit. The highest expression of wisdom on the part of the many involves, first, appreciation for the still greater wisdom of the few, and secondly, the high-minded. 466 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Nest to waive the rights of personal privilege that thereby the greatest good to the greatest number may be achieved. Death is the invariable product of ignorance, but life is prolonged in conformity with intelligence. Heedless of our own destiny, in the vain struggle for possessions we often perish for lack of wisdom even as we reach out to grasp the substance of our desires. The plains of earth are broad, the resources of earth are incalculable, and on this globe there is ample to satisfy the needs of all. Through commerce and industry, through legitimate intercourse and exchange, and with reasonable effort man can enjoy those necessities which contribute to his well-being. Acceptance of the false principle of diversity, however, has been man's undoing, for the existence of contiguous states or nations has been the excuse for their exploitation. Boundary lines were originally set up that they might later become diplomatic technicalities, for it was presupposed that an invading horde should someday sweep them away. Nations consequently prey upon nations according to their presumptions of necessity. Strong peoples absorb weaker peoples into themselves, thereby depriving some of that which is necessary, that others may have more than enough. Oppression by the invader and retaliatory wars by the oppressed are the inevitable products of such encroachments. Fighting for what he conceives to be his inherent rights, the patriot is a martyr to vain standards and hopeless issues. He opposes ignorance with ignorance, and thus the sorrows of the ages are compounded. Man destroys man that man may live, life lives by killing. Freedom is achieved by intolerance, and, if we are to believe the pronouncements of the foolish, peace is preserved by the sword. Where, may we ask, is the beginning or the end of this vicious circle which survives by destroying and also destroys by surviving? Occasionally we find an individual of such innate perversity that he will actually cheat himself in material things. In matters pertaining to the spirit, however, dishonesty is quite the common order. In our foragings we generally descend. The goal of philosophy. 467. Assyrian like upon the stranger, still reasoning with primitive caveman logic that which is not already our own is legitimate prey. With the abolishment of political states and the unification of all peoples into one great nation, the misunderstanding directly due to national jealousy and competing shin would be outlawed, for what people would be so foolish as to raise an army for the conquest of that which is already part of itself and cooperating for the sovereign good? Such a national attitude, when once established, would constitute a powerful moral deterrent to individual conduct. So far reaching is the influence of our environment that in a comparatively short time the spirit of competition, as applied to individual concerns, would be broken, and men would build into the common pattern of public will instead of striving to acquire a passing supremacy over the bodies of the dead. To be a wholesale killer is no longer the hallmark of greatness, for no strength is stronger than that which, withholding the hand, prevents violence, no courage more courageous than that which, facing the problems of each passing day, fights the battles of peace. Upon first thought, it may be difficult to visualize a world ruled by philosophy instead of politics. What is politics, however, but the philosophy of government? Is it not universal? Law applied to the government of men, and should not the one who is made a ruler over others be conversant also with those side real forces by which the order of creation is maintained? If a knowledge of cosmogony and universal law were a prerequisite to rulership, how many of our present governors would occupy their official chairs? Yet, for the regulation of human affairs, what pattern is more sublime than the harmony of the celestial spheres or the innate orderliness of crystal formation? The science of mundane government has failed because it has ceased to be a science of government and has become a science of personal interests. What is responsible for this poor version and misdirection of executive power? Simply the elevation of the unfit. We recall the words of that satirist who, philosophizing upon the effects of the French Revolution, 468 lectures on ancient philosophy, declared that the reign of terror had taken the affairs of the state out of the hands of a despotic few and transferred them into the keeping of the unqualified many. Let us never forget the words of that great Jewish statesman, Disraeli, who said, "The world is weary of statesmen whom democracy has degraded into politicians." The theory of democracy is one of the noblest yet conceived by man. It is the aristocratic gesture of the proletarian. It fails, however, because at no time can man be more than himself, for man's government, like his God perforce, must be but a highly magnified reflection of himself. The true seat of government is in the home. In his Apophthegms of Kings and Grand Commanders, Plutarch describes a reformer who was discussing with Lycurgus the setting up of a democracy in Sparta. "Pray," retorted the Spartan lawgiver, "do you first set up a democracy in your own house? Governments obviously cannot succeed where men fail, for we are the makers of government, and our statutes unsparingly reflect both the depth and the shallowness of our own individual selves. When the citizen is told to appoint a representative, he generally takes the advice too literally. If the leader resembles too faithfully his constituency, he is unable to point out to his following any course of action which they could not have discovered by their own efforts. Hence, the interval of rationality should intervene between the governed and the governor. When this interval of superiority is insufficient, our vices and not our virtues become the rulers of the state. Democracy," writes Lowell in the Bigelow Papers, "gives every man a right to be his own oppressor. Each faction of the people mistakenly assumes that its primal need is a representative who will interpret its whims and further its own particular ends at the expense of all other groups. Philosophy, however, corrects this attitude, declaring that the popular need is a virtuous mind strong enough to incline the populace toward a greater good. The spokesman of the masses seldom says anything, for the voice of the masses is the incoherent babble of many voices in which no single voice is intelligible. The political